Right, our next case is number 18-12457, Harborside Place LLC versus the Town of Jupiter. Mr. Figg.
Good morning. May it please the court. I'm Paul Figg on behalf of Harborside Place. Because this appeal involves a noise ordinance and whether it is constitutional under the First Amendment, I want to start off with a reference point. When you go home at night and sit down at the dinner table and have that conversation, that ordinary conversation, how was your day? The sound level of that ordinary conversation is 60 to 65 decibels. That is the same sound level that the town wants to impose at the property line of a sound-producing property without respect to whether there's a recipient of that sound. There are two means of regulation under the First Amendment that signal potential likely violations of the First Amendment: content-based regulation and prior restraint. Ordinance 116 has both. The presence of either means Ordinance 116 is presumptively unconstitutional. Ordinance 116 regulates content of sound in two ways. Section 13-86A3 specifically treats sound differently based upon its expressive content by requiring...
That's not correct. I mean, how can it... It regulates it based on whether or not it is a live performance or not, but not the type of performance. You could have a Shakespeare production. You could have a political speech. You could have a live musical performance. You could have a one-person comedy show. All of those get treated the same no matter what the content of the speech is. Is that not correct?
That is not correct. Under A3, only outside live musical performance is subject to the prior restraint of either outdoor venue approval or special permit scheme. Other sounds, all of those other expressions that you mentioned that create sound, any of those can be engaged in without getting the town's permission in advance. And that, it is the unequal application with respect to sound which makes it content-based. As the Supreme Court said in City of Cincinnati v. Discovery Network, a sound ordinance is permissible when it applies to music, political speech, advertising, because all of those make sound.
Council, has the town attempted to enforce this ordinance yet?
The town has not specifically enforced Ordinance 116 against us. It adopted Ordinance 116, and we went straight to court. However, the town applied the noise ordinance it had prior to the adoption of Ordinance 116 for a period of 2 years. In that application, the town interpreted that ordinance in such a manner that was unsupported by the text of the noise ordinance. When we pointed that out, the town then...
But you don't have the same argument with that particular ordinance as far as content-based or prior restraint, do you?
No, we do not.
Okay.
We do not.
And so I think we're on totally different grounds with regard to the court's ruling on that as we are with the new ordinance. Talk to me about the new ordinance. Do you have any concerns about the issue not being ripe for consideration? Has the town evidenced its intention to enforce the ordinance, or has it taken any steps to say we're not going to enforce it or anything like that?
The town has taken the steps of saying, well, outside of this record, it has, but that's outside of this record.
That's not an issue that was raised at any time in the district court, ripeness of the issue.
They did raise the issue that we have not enforced this ordinance yet.
Okay.
But it did apply to everyone in the town.
Did the court consider that argument of ripeness at all?
I think the court did not accept that argument because it was...
Did it address it? You know? If you don't know, it's okay. Just
I don't believe so.
All right, and then the court also did not address your prior restraint argument at all. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. So even if we decided that the district court maybe it was correct on the its initial ruling with regard to the content-based consideration of that ordinance, would it be necessary for us to send it back to the district court and request the district court to consider the prior restraint argument that you made and to make findings with regard to that?
Yes, it would, because that rendered the ordinance presumptively unconstitutional. Now, they had the burden to...
They argued it in their briefs, I believe, to the district court, did they not? And you argued it, and they argued it, and the district court just didn't address it.
They didn't present any evidence that it wasn't... that the regulations were reasonable, narrowly drawn, and...
I know that's your position, that their evidence didn't show that, but they argued it certainly to the district court.
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you. You've answered
that issue's a... No, please go ahead.
Is there any evidence in the record about why live music is being treated differently from other types of sound?
I think there is some basis to treat live music differently than other types of sound, but once again, you have to analyze that under strict scrutiny, because there's no evidence in this record supporting that the means the town took in regulating sound, regulating live musical performances specifically, did not... implicated in, I'm sorry, there's no evidence in this record that the town...
I'm talking specifically about whether, in determining whether or not this is content-based, mm-hmm. if there was something about the quality of the sound that had nothing to do with the fact it was music as opposed to political speech, that's what I'm trying to get at. So is there any evidence in the record?
It had nothing to do with the quality of sound, which I think was certainly an issue in the Ward case.
But I mean, it could be the case that live music is more difficult to control because you're dealing with a live performer. Is there anything like that in the record?
There is testimony. The only testimony that differentiates live music from, say, recorded music is that live music cannot be put through a limiter. So, for example, if you could control all of my sound and put it into this microphone, you could have a limiter that would compress that sound so that you wouldn't be able to violate the sound ordinance. But my sound makes, my voice makes noise that doesn't get put into this, and so does a live drum or brass or any other kind of instrument. And that's the only difference between live musical performance and recorded musical performance.
But counsel, if we imposed a rule that said only you will speak through the limiter, no one else, that would be an example of prior restraint and content-based restriction, would it not?
Correct. Okay. And it does, in a sense, because for residential property owners, your son could have his band play in the garage of your home. He doesn't have to get a permanent advance. Why does a commercial property owner have to get that permanent advance?
Because a commercial property is not going to have a kid playing a band, playing instruments in a garage.
What about the circumstance of a restaurant that has a patio with an acoustical performer? That is,
I don't know.
That's a normal circumstance, and that would require the prior approval of the town. In commercial zones or non-residential zones, sound is less of a concern.
But it can't be, right, that every single permitting ordinance constitutes a prior restraint. There are requirements, for example, to get permits to conduct a demonstration on public thoroughfares. Not all of those are prior restraints. They can be, but they're not categorically so. What is it about this permitting process that, in your opinion, constitutes or makes it a prior restraint?
I think all of those processes are prior restraints. The question is whether they're unlawful prior restraints.
And prior restraints are presumptively unconstitutional.
Correct.
And permitting schemes get upheld all the time.
But you can show that they are constitutional by showing that your regulations, your permitting regulations, are reasonable, narrowly drawn, and objective. But when you have permitting regulations that use such words as, you need to minimize sound here, or notwithstanding the fact that you have a noise ordinance, the permitting official can impose sound restrictions more restrictive than the noise ordinance. At that point, these regulations are not grounded in something objective, and they've gone beyond what the town has already considered to be the balance of interest between private property rights and sound as a nuisance.
Was your argument with regards to the different parts of the ordinance in the district court facial or as applied?
Facial with respect to most of it. There's kind of a unique circumstance with respect to the applied because they are applying Ordinance 116 based upon their prior misinterpretation of the...
No, but that's not the way as applied goes. As applied is not the way they're doing it. It's as applied to you.
Yes.
So my question to you is, when you challenged the different parts of the ordinance and the scheme in the district court, whether you challenged it on prior restraint or content-based grounds, was your challenge facial, as applied, or both?
Facial and as applied.
As applied to what?
As applied to the sound produced at Harborside's outdoor venue.
Which was what? Normally in an as-applied challenge, I think, the plaintiff says, this statute says X, Y, and Z. It may be okay on its face, but as applied to me, when I engage in Act A, that statute is unconstitutional. So using that as an analogy, what did you say was being applied unconstitutionally to you based on your purported conduct?
Okay. The town, first of all, the sound standard that was applied through its special permitting process from 2014 to 2016 was 55 dBA over a 3-minute LEQ, which is average of sound over 3 minutes, at the receiving property line. Now, at some point, that changed to 75 dBA at a measuring point on our property that was inside the property line. That is where the town came up with the term surrounding upland property line in its amendment of the noise ordinance. Those two things were applied consistently. And what that application showed is we can meet 55 at the property line, and we can meet the application of the old instantaneous sound standard over there also. We can meet all of those standards, but the town specifically adopted this new peak standard because it knew we could not meet it. They admitted this. They said they had a solution for it. They did not adopt that solution when they adopted Ordinance 116. The peak measurement, as their expert testified, in one piece of 3-minute music can give you 43,000 violations. The peak standard was not adopted to regulate excessive sound. It was adopted to find violations, to control content.
Counsel, let me boil it down to soup, because I know you're over your time. And if the town was to change their ordinance to be not only musical performances, but all performances, then that would eliminate content-based analysis. We would do strict scrutiny. We would do the traditional. And then if the district court evaluated prior restraint and found that the prior restraint applied to your client was legal and reasonable, then the town would be free to do that. Is that correct?
That is correct. If you treated all sound the same, equal application, 1386A3 would not be content-based.
And if we found that 16.1, the new ordinance, was invalid, unconstitutional, and they went back to the ordinance that they're applying against you now, your center arguments would still be there, your arguments about how they're controlling you under the old ordinance, but that was a decision that was not made under strict scrutiny by the district court and properly not made under strict scrutiny. Is that correct?
I'm not sure I understand the specific question.
We completely complied
with the old noise ordinance. That's our position.
Okay.
So it didn't need to be analyzed under anything.
So you'd be fine?
Yes.
Okay.
Is subsection A, in your opinion, is subsection A1 content-based?
It is not. It regulates sound during the nighttime equally.
For everybody?
For everybody.
With regard to a sound amplification device or other sort of machine?
Correct.
We're dealing with daytime.
We're dealing with daytime, correct.
Right, right. I just wanted to get your thoughts on, yes, on A1. Okay, Mr. Fick, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll give you your time for rebuttal. Mr. Roberts.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, George Roberts on behalf of the town of Jupiter. What is appealed here is the denial of a drastic and extraordinary remedy of a temporary injunction. It was a result of an evidentiary hearing held 9 months after the suit was filed, and then the decision was rendered 20 months later in May 2018. What is issue here, and I think probably is most enlightening, is if you read the conclusion of the motion for emergency temporary injunction. It was filed on June 10, 2016. Harborside respectfully requests entry of a temporary injunction on an emergency basis requiring the town to monitor Harborside's compliance with the town's exterior sound ordinance by measuring exterior sounds created by Harborside at the Water's Edge residential property line as it is done throughout 2015, and prohibiting the town from interfering with Harborside's regularly scheduled free public programming through physical force or threats, or through the threat of actual issuance of punitive notices of violation until this case is finally decided on the merits, and for such other relief as the court deems just and proper. You'll note that there's no request here that anything be found unconstitutional, that there's no argument that there was a prior restraint, that there was any treatment. All they wanted with this temporary injunction was for the court to change the ordinance. The ordinance in June 2016 was no different, for as it was respect to them, than it was before that. The instantaneous peak measurement standard was never applied to them, because you read the ordinance 13.86A, outdoor amplified sound is limited to 60 decibels during the day in a mixed-use sound zone. Table 1. You go to Table 1, and that's where all outdoor amplified sound is measured throughout the town. Now, what happened here in this case...
Before you get to that...
Sure.
The district court understood Harborside's motion for an injunction as including at least some constitutional claims. So I'm reading from page 2 of its order.
Correct.
Harborside contends that the enactment of the ordinance has resulted in an unconstitutional limitation on its right of freedom of expression under the First and 14th Amendments by unlawfully restricting its ability to have live music performed at Harborside Place.
Correct.
So
I agree with
there's
that.
There were some constitutional claims asserted, not only in the complaint, but in the motion for injunctive relief, right?
And certainly there was argument at the hearing on those. There's no question about that. But I guess it posits the other question here, that they ask in their brief that this denial be reversed. But nowhere do they say what it is the court should have done.
Counsel, is it without question, or do you legitimately question the fact as to whether or not this ordinance is content-based?
No, I agree with the district court that it's content-neutral.
You do?
Yes, sir. Okay. And the reason I say that is what I was going to say is number A, 1386A, talks about outdoor amplified sound. You have three different scenarios here in the town of Jupiter. You have noise, just noise. Then you have amplified noise. You have indoor amplified noise, and that's in 13.85. Then you have, excuse me, outdoor amplified noise, which is in 1386A. Now, the limit there is 60 decibels. If you want to play louder music, then you go to 1386B, which says, we recognize, and this just started in 2010 with the indication or the establishment of Guanabana's up the street. If you want to have an outdoor venue, which means you want to have an outdoor stage and you're going to play music, primarily live music, outdoors, we're going to let you do that if you follow these regulations. And we're going to assign initially 60 and now by virtue of the amendment, increase to 65 decibels, always, always measured at your property line. As the district court pointed out, that really wasn't changed. The only thing that was changed about it was the adding the word upland, because recognizing the fact that both Guanabana's and Harborside were on the water. So we wanted to clarify, where is that property line? It's the upland property line, and that was not ambiguous. So this particular exception to the normal thing was added to give them some benefits. If they didn't want that benefit, they didn't have to.
Counsel, if you go to 13-86A3.
Sure.
And I'm just going to read it. Outside live musical performances associated with a non-residential establishment shall meet the outdoor venue regulations of subsection B below, or obtain special permits pursuant to Chapter 27, Article 4, entitled Special Permits.
Correct.
All right. Isn't that the basis for your opposing counsel arguing that it was content-based?
That's what he argues.
Okay.
I don't agree with it.
I got you. Just follow with me, though.
Yeah.
Did you restrict any other performances, like instead of outdoor live musical performances, did you restrict political performances? Arguments that might be brought on by law students that were there making moot court arguments that were live, did you restrict those during the day when they were amplified? Did you restrict comedy performances? Did you restrict anything else in such a manner as to require that they meet the outdoor venue regulations of subsection B below or obtain special permits? Did you do that with your ordinance?
Well, the special permit ordinance, again, allows, you know, you take the ordinance, the sound or noise ordinance, and then the special permit ordinance allows an exception to that.
Are you saying that other performances also have to comply with that same restriction?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. It depends upon what you're presenting.
So okay. It's just a misunderstanding that not only is live musical performances required to do that, but you're saying that all performances, everything that's live, everything that's there is required to go under the same restrictions with regard to sound, where it's measured, the manner in which it's measured, and the level to which it cannot exceed.
Well, and again, your point, my point is that the outdoor venue is a special category. And before the amendment in June of 2016, it didn't say live music, okay? It just said that. But recognizing that what we have for this outdoor venue category is essentially live music, and it doesn't say that, we want to add it in there. Other ones don't come into that because they're not outdoor venues.
But he I think Judge Kugler started out by asking you a different question about
sure.
whether or not this was content-based. Your position, I take it, is that if a law, statute, or ordinance regulates only one category of speech, but is not based on the content within that category, it is not a content-based restriction. Is that right?
That's correct.
Isn't that really turning content-based into viewpoint-based?
No. I mean, there's nothing in the ordinance which talks about the type of music that is doing it. It's a recognition that music, just like it's amplified sound. I mean, and what you also have to recognize is that when the ordinance was amended, outdoor venue is defined. And it is defined, and that change in a minute included live music.
Could you change A3 to talk about outside live political expression constitutionally?
No.
Why is this any different?
Well, because this is just sound. We're only regulating sound.
But in my hypothetical, you're just regulating the sound, but the sound of political expression.
No.
Here you're regulating the sound of live musical performances. Why is one content-based and not the other?
Because it's music is the sound. It's not the type of music that's being played.
Political speech is a sound. It's not the type of political speech being expressed.
Well,
right?
The outdoor venue presented a specific type of situation where the live music, recorded music. At this outdoor venue, they play movies, too. And they play, they have speeches. They have classes and stuff like that. All of that recognition, the particular thing, falls within it. It is not just live music. It covers a variety of different things that are going to be presented at that. And it's a recognition that this type of thing, so close to the residential area, where there's a substantial interest in doing it, and certainly a wealth of complaints about the noise level there, is in the substantial interest of the town to recognize and to regulate.
Council?
Yes, sir.
I have a personal preference in the kind of music that I like. You know, country, sure. I guess, is probably old hard rock from back in my days, sure, as I'm older. I don't particularly care for rap music. It's not my taste. Okay? But this ordinance, with the requirement that a permit have to be obtained, doesn't it enable the town to review prior to a performance and pick what kinds of music? Maybe they despise rap, and there's other kinds of music out there. Maybe they don't like a Christian group that's going to play. Maybe they don't like some other group that's going to play. Isn't that the problem with prior restraint? The reason why we have to be so cautious when we allow just a blanket kind of a restriction? And the district court apparently did not go through any kind of analysis on the prior restraint. But isn't that part of the problem that we have with this ordinance?
I agree with you that prior restraint is unlawful. I don't think this ordinance requires that. And the reason I say that is because If you don't want an outdoor venue there, you can go out there and have a guitar player, and whenever you do it, the requirements in here all relate to the level of sound. None of them relate to what kind of music are you going to play, whether you're going to have amplified sound of a political speech or that nature. All they talk about is...
I think what Judge Kugler is trying to ask you, and he can correct me if I'm wrong, is that if you don't meet the outdoor venue requirements, then you have to get a special permit, right?
If you want to go to the above those, yes, sound levels.
And by getting a special permit, I think his question is asking whether or not you are putting in the hands of the government the decision about whether or not to favor one kind of musical expression over another by granting the government the ability to grant or deny special permits when they're sought.
Well, we have experience, and the record is replete with it. 150 special permits were granted during the year 2015. Not a one of them told them that they couldn't play a certain type of music or not. Okay, so we had that experience. As applied, they wanted to go back there. What happened during the year 2015 through 2016 is because they had not achieved their certification as an outdoor venue. They hadn't met those requirements in order to ameliorate the sound. So the town took the extra step of going and say, well, ordinarily you could only entitle to 40 special permits a year, but we'll give you more, and they ended up giving 150 special permits. Each time they applied for it, they asked, you know, what they wanted to do, and the town said, here's the conditions of the permit.
Exactly. What do you want to do? That's the question that your town was asking, and that's where I have a problem with it. Why didn't the district court address that question?
Because the district court didn't find it, found it to be content for neutral and didn't find a prior restraint, because the town, as he said, the town's actions were reasonable in this situation. He addressed it. He just said it was reasonable as an alternative to allow them to do this rather than doing nothing else. From the very outset of this case, they wanted, as a part of their development approval, they wanted to have an outdoor venue. It goes back to 2013. At that point in time, they received an approval of it. They just had to meet the requirements, which dealt with the attenuation of sound. And they just never wanted to do that. And so no matter what they played, and the town didn't care what they played, it's only that the sound level was not meeting the town code.
Did they say that in the ordinance? We don't care what you play. We're gonna give you a permit on anything as long as the sound is exactly this.
Well, the permits talk about a lot of different things. It talks about police presence and things of other public safety nature. But you know, as far as the sound level, it simply says 75 dB at that property line or 55 dB there at that property line. It doesn't say you can't play country music. And in fact, there was a country music concert. There were all kinds of concerts. There's Frank Sinatra concerts. It varied. Not a one time in the 150 permits did the town ever say, no, you can't get a permit because I don't like that music.
Did you say Frank Sinatra came and played since?
Well, it was they had an Elvis Presley thing.
Oh, okay.
Memorial.
If I may, Judge Jordan, I want to go back to a question that Judge Kugler asked you. So are you saying that an outside live comedy performance in a non-residential establishment would have to meet the same requirements, either be an outdoor venue or have a permit, even though it says live music?
Well, it says outdoor amplified sound is limited to 60 dB during the year.
Well, I'm talking about 116, the subsection 3 that refers to outside live musical performances.
Right.
If it were an outside live comedy performance associated with a non-residential establishment, would it be required to either be an outdoor venue or get a special permit?
The outdoor sound amplification, and if you used an outdoor sound amplification machine or device, but not limited to radio, musical instrument, disc, tape, loudspeaker, sound amplifier, or other machine, device for the reproduction of sound between the hours, except to prove as an outdoor venue, from 11 to 7 a.m. So anyway, it has to, subsection B below, okay, it refers to outdoor venue. It all depends on what you want to do as far as level of sound. If you want to go to a higher level of sound, then you've got to meet these requirements. It doesn't matter what you're doing. It's whether the level of sound is involved. The level of sound under subsection A1 is 60 dB in a mixed-use sound. It's 55 in a residential, and they changed it to mixed-use without residential and residential, and changed it so recognizing the fact. You see, Harborside requested an amendment to this ordinance on two occasions, both of which they drew. In those two occasions, they essentially asked exactly what they asked for in the temporary injunction motion. They wanted to change the location, and they wanted to change the measurement. And it didn't really matter what they were playing, here, there, whether it was a comedy show.
I understand your argument. Thank you.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Roberts.
Uh-huh.
Mr. Figg. Mr. Figg, before you start, let me ask you a question.
Yes, sir.
When a motion for preliminary injunction can always be narrower than the complaint that's filed before it. And so my question to you is, when you moved for injunctive relief, what constitutional theories did you assert? Everything that was in the complaint, or was the motion for preliminary injunctive relief narrower in scope and in claim than the complaint?
Well, it was certainly...
In other words, you may have, and I'm not saying this is this case, but you may have a case where someone argues this ordinance is content-based, unconstitutional on that ground. This ordinance is a prior restraint, unconstitutional on that ground. But then you move for preliminary injunctive relief only on ground one, but not ground two. And so the district court doesn't address count two for purposes of the injunction motion. So that's all predecessor stuff. What theories did you assert in your preliminary injunction motion?
We asserted the theory that Ordinance 116 both regulated the content of speech and imposed unlawful prior restraints.
Both?
Both.
Okay, got it.
Both. And the judge understood that. He specifically addressed a question to counsel, and I can quote, it's volume 15 at 48 and 49 of 207, because musical performances are kind of singled out from other forms of expression, and there is a burden put on them to get a permit or conform to an outdoor venue requirement in order to play a musical performance, that's it. It's putting a prior restraint or unconstitutional restraint on the expression of music, which is constitutionally protected form of expression. That's the judge's words. So he certainly understood that this was a prior restraint claim as well as the content-based claim.
Okay, thank you.
I want to briefly again touch on...
Can I ask a question, and it may be, I don't want to violate any mediation rules, but you all participated in extensive mediation, as I understand, early on in the case. Was there, and you can just say if this violates your mediation rules, but was there ever discussion about how this ordinance could be repaired in such a way that to eliminate all the concerns? Because what I'm hearing is the town is saying, we were just trying to give them what they wanted, being able to have louder music during the day. And you're saying if they had not made it just about music, we wouldn't have had as much of a problem. So
there's been a fundamental disagreement that's kind of perpetuated this dispute, and that is whether the old noise ordinance regulated sound at the sound-producing property. Now, we all agreed throughout this process you could regulate sound at the sound-producing property, but so long as whatever the standard you're imposing there is designed
District judge applied intermediate scrutiny to that, did he not?
That is correct.
And he considered the evidence, and he made analysis, and he came to a conclusion.
That is correct.
So if we think he's right on that, does that solve your problems?
If we think he's right...
If we think what he did was the correct way to handle the situation, does that resolve the issues that you have? In other words, could you resolve this case? So that we don't see you all back in court again, and we don't just send it back to the district court.
Yes. If you think that he's wrong, that could resolve this case because...
I understand that. But sometimes we're not at liberty to make decisions that a district judge is at liberty to consider the evidence and make.
Okay, except to the argument of whether or not imposition of a peak standard at 10 decibels above the 3-minute standard is content-based. That could require a full record. We believe we met our burden on that, which shifted the burden to them. But we would be entitled to a full trial on that particular issue.
But this is an appeal from a denial of preliminary injunctive relief. So this is not a full-blown decision on the merits, and it's an abuse of discretion standard. So part of what you're asking us to do, it seems like, is to redo this stuff de novo.
No, Your Honor, that's right? Not exactly correct.
Because as I understand Supreme Court law, what we're supposed to be doing is reviewing for abuse of discretion whether or not the district court correctly concluded that you don't have a substantial likelihood of success on the merits. That's a couple of interlaid standards, but it's certainly not de novo. right?
It is not de novo, but it is not abuse of discretion in the normal sense.
Why not?
In the First Amendment context, and this is in United States v. Playboy Entertainment, Southeast Promotions Limited, and I'd particularly direct you to a case out of the Ninth Circuit called Thalheimer v. City of San Diego, which is 645 F3rd at 1109, 1115 through 16. The standard of review is, in a First Amendment case, at a preliminary injunction, we have to establish a colorable claim that it's content-based or imposes a prior restraint. The burden then shifts to the government to prove that either that meets strict scrutiny or, with respect to a prior restraint, it's not an unlawful prior restraint. And that is the standard in a preliminary injunction on a First Amendment case, which—
Or the district court.
For the district court.
We're not the district court. Okay, let's try to get back to basics, and maybe we can sort of get on the same page. Do we owe any deference whatsoever to anything that the district court did in this case? Just generally, anything. Anything at all, any deference.
Because the court did not properly apply strict scrutiny as opposed to intermediate scrutiny, no.
Factual findings get no deference. We get to do the facts ourselves.
You don't get to do the facts yourselves.
Then there's deference owed.
You get to send it back.
Then there's deference owed to factual findings.
No, I'm saying there's been a mistake in the law and the facts need to be assessed.
No, that means that the district court's factual findings may not support the ultimate conclusion if the district court applied the wrong standard. I think you're right about that.
Okay.
But we don't get to second guess pure factual findings unless they're clearly erroneous. Am I wrong about that, even though this is a First Amendment case?
No. Like if there's an undisputed testimony in the record. Although I do
believe— No, not undisputed. Disputed.
Right, disputed is what I mean.
Disputed.
Although, in the Bose case, there is a slightly different standard in the First Amendment. And what's particular—
Sure, for so-called constitutional facts.
Correct.
Right, but not historical facts. So, for example, if the district court said the intent, based on the information and the evidence I received— The intent of the town of Jupiter was not to do X, Y, and Z. Does that get clear error review?
Yes.
Right, it has to be, right?
Yes.
And then your argument is, but the court misapplied the legal standards, didn't even apply a second legal standard, so you've got to send it all back.
Correct.
Okay, I understand. Okay, we'll give you 30 seconds to wrap up, Mr. Figg, if you want.
Okay. I think what I want to do is just touch briefly on the purpose behind the content-based standard. And I think Justice Scalia said this best. The vice of content-based legislation is not that it is always used for invidious thought control purposes, but that it lends itself to that use. And so let me give you a perfect example of how this plays out.
You're running on your 30 seconds.
Sorry. Very quickly, the district court said that it didn't believe that they were controlling the actual viewpoint and prohibiting rap, hip-hop, and heavy metal because we voluntarily put that in our statement of use with every application. Well, it really shouldn't be a burden on us to prove that we didn't voluntarily submit to that. It doesn't make any sense that we would voluntarily limit our performances in every single statement of use. And that's why the burden is on the town to show that its special permit permitting scheme complies with that narrow, reasonable, and objective standard.
All right, Mr. Figg. Thank you very much. Thank you both.
You.